Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Watching employees at work, the White House wants to know more about certain technology being used against workers. Today on the show, we focus on Amazon delivery drivers who organize, and we'll check in with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Welcome to the Wednesday, May 10th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with a longtime union lawyer, almost 30 years. Andrew Strom is his name, and he currently serves as an associate general counsel of the Service Employees International Union. This would be local 32BJ in New York. That's a big local. Andrew is also a senior contributor for the On Labor blog, where he writes on a regular basis about current labor issues. In fact, his writing has appeared in legal journals, and he's also written for wider audiences in Dollars and Cents, in a publication called Dissent. And he's got a pretty interesting background. He received his Juris Doctorate from the Harvard Law School, and he graduated magna cum laude. Yeah, pretty bright individual. We are bringing him to the broadcast and podcast today for very good reason. And we talked about this on the show maybe about a week or two ago, and it involves Amazon. And right now, the International Brotherhood of Teamsters filed an unfair labor practice complaint against Amazon in a case that will test what's called the joint employer doctrine. At the end of April, delivery service workers at BTS, that stands for Battle Tested Strategies, they're located in Palmdale, California. They're an Amazon subcontractor. Well, they ratified a union contract with Teamsters Local 396 and BTS. In response, Amazon has retaliated against the workers and the company. The owner of BTS, Jonathan Irvin, claims that Amazon has punished him for supporting the workers' union drive, and that in so doing, Amazon has clearly established itself as a joint or maybe even single employer of the drivers. Irvin noted that Amazon retains complete control over Amazon systems and the hiring and firing of drivers. But what we're seeing now is Amazon not liking unions. So they are pulling out all the stops, including the grounding of the vehicles, calling security, saying that BTS, well, we didn't like them anyway. National Labor Relations Board will now confront this complaint. This is going to be an interesting conversation because we know where Amazon stands and unions are trying to organize. And rightly so. This is a company that works people to death. Injury rate, more than twice that of a regular warehouse. So Andrew will be our first guest. Our second guest on the show comes from the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. That's the official name of the Boilermakers. And joining us is Amy Martin Weiser. Amy is the Director of Communications for that union. And she's got an extensive background in communications, more than 25 years experience. Prior to joining the Boilermakers, she was Chief Communications Officer for Kiwanis International, where she led the global organization's overall communication strategy. She's originally from Indianapolis, Indiana, holds a bachelor's degree in English and journalism from Franklin College, involved in the Public Relations Society of America, and get this, she's a graduate back in 2019 from the Harvard Trade Union Program and serves on the AFL-CIO's Union Label Board and is a member of Local 693 in Pascagoula, Mississippi. We're going to talk about what is a boilermaker. Well, boilermakers are essential when we talk about a clean energy future. They've been part of the pollution solution for many years. As new technologies have emerged to clean up energy sources, they've been big advocates for carbon capture, now clean hydrogen, and they've been doing this for at least a decade. Amy says, we believe in the all-of-the-above approach to solving the climate crisis and providing clean, reliable energy and carbon capture, clean hydrogen, and other new technologies. And we're also going to talk about careers with the boilermakers. She reports the time has been so ripe in a long time to guide more people to union jobs in the trades. Unionization is on the rise, we know that. And young people are understanding the power of organizing. And when you throw in the Inflation Reduction Act, there's many great paying jobs in the trades. And as unions, we've got to make that message loud and clear that there is a fantastic career path for people who want to work with their hands, make a difference, and at the same time, earn a great living. That's what it's all about. You can follow the Boilermakers at Boilermaker News. Boilermaker News. Website is boilermakers.org. So Amy Weiser will be our second guest on the show. Unions in the news, making news. This labor update brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients around the country. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. The White House announced a public request for information on the use of automated technology that surveils, manages, and evaluates workers. The announcement notes the increase in worker surveillance and points to examples such as warehouse workers who use scanners that clock how fast they work, nurses who wear badges that monitor movements, and office workers who use software that tracks their keystrokes. This is a scary world that we live in today. Everyone is watching you. Not everyone, but obviously certain computer models are doing this. This announcement explains that this kind of technology may have benefits, but it may also push workers to move too fast, deter worker organizing, and lead to differential treatment of workers. The White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and the Domestic Policy Council are looking for, quote, ideas for how the federal government should respond to any relevant risks and opportunities. And this call for information comes amid state-level efforts. A couple of states that are looking into this right now include Minnesota, California, and New York, and they're trying to figure out how to regulate the use of worker surveillance technology. Representatives Emmanuel Cleaver, who's a Democrat out of Missouri, and Sylvia Garcia, a Dem out of Texas, sent a letter to the General Counsel of the Labor Board asking them to investigate allegations of unfair labor practices at Apple retail stores in Kansas City and Houston. And this comes after reports that retail workers were fired and faced intimidation on the job for exercising their right to collectively organize. Any allegation that the largest corporation in the world is using its institutional power to silence and stamp out workers' God-given right to collectively bargain for fairer wages, better benefits, and increase workplace safety is extremely disconcerting. But allegations of retaliation from numerous workers of the same retail store should be investigated with the seriousness that this situation deserves. That's a comment from Congressman Cleaver. Now, in March, The Communication Workers of America filed unfair labor practice charges with the Labor Board due to Apple's retaliatory conduct. The board has previously held that Apple broke labor law by holding captive audience meetings and making coercive anti-union statements during a union organizing campaign. This was at a store in Atlanta. Earlier this year, the board again ruled that Apple's work and confidentiality rules interfered with employees' Section 7 rights by restraining them from discussing wages and other conditions at work. So, we'll see what happens on that one. We have more news on the Hollywood writers' strike, which is now in its second week. And as the writers continue their strike, they are turning up the heat on Hollywood executives by shutting down production on various shows that are actively filming and planting their picket lines right outside the studios and production locations. Early Monday morning, picketing writers halted filming on the New York set of season 2 of the acclaimed Apple TV series Severance. Crew members on the show refused to cross the picket line in solidarity with the writers. Across town, another group of picketing writers shut down production outside the set of the Marvel series Daredevil. Then on Friday night, writers picketed the set of the CBS drama series Evil. A handful of writers continued to picket until the early hours of Saturday morning, successfully shutting down production simply by walking in a small circle. In Los Angeles on Friday, picketing writers halted production on the set of Apple TV sitcom Loot. And earlier in the week, the writers also halted production on the New York sets of FX's American Horror Story and Showtime's Billions. In addition to shows actively filming, the writers' strike has altered shows in all stages of production. Late-night shows like Saturday Night Live are on hiatus until studio executives agree to a fair deal with the writers. And yesterday we talked about this. The MTV Movie and TV Awards were taped instead of held live. And this was after the host, Drew Barrymore, withdrew in solidarity with the writers. Writers also stopped writing new seasons of shows like season 3 of Showtime's Yellow Jackets. Shows that were already written and slated to begin filming are also now on pause. Among the biggest so far, Stranger Things creators Matt and Ross Duffer announced over the weekend they are halting production on the show's upcoming 5th and final season. They wrote on Twitter, "Writing does not stop when filming begins," referring to how writers are often rewriting and making adjustments right on the set. This is going to be an interesting one to watch. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with a Service Employees International labor lawyer and talk about Amazon and their delivery drivers. The right to unionize, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org. We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next portion of America's Workforce is sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to imed.com/union and you'll learn a whole lot more. Before we get to our first guest, I want to do a shout out here to the Coalition of Labor Union Women. They are gathering right now at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. This started actually yesterday, and they're hosting a education conference that'll wrap up tomorrow. The Coalition of Labor Union Women, better known as CLU, is America's only national organization of union women, formed back in 1974. They're a nonpartisan organization within the union movement. Primary purpose, real simple, unify all union women in a strong organization to determine and seek remedies to our common problems and concerns and to develop action programs within the framework of the labor movement to effectively promote our objectives. And we have many to promote. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome a newcomer to the show. His name is Andrew Strom. And he is a labor lawyer and been doing this for three decades and works full-time with the Service Employees International Union, Local 32BJ in New York. And we've featured that local on the show a couple of times. And he's here to talk about the Amazon Delivery Drivers Union having a bit of a problem with Amazon. Andrew, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be here. I just want to be clear that I'm speaking just as my own self today and not on behalf of my union.
I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I totally understand. But anyway, BJ, I just want to give a shout out. We appreciate what they do for our brothers and sisters there. Powerful union, Service Employees. I believe they're the largest union in the AFL-CIO. But yeah, you're a contributor to a blog, which I check out every day called On Labor. onlabor.org. A lot of good information that we relay on the show. And that's exactly where I found this story about the Amazon drivers. And I guess there's like 84 of them. They work for a company called Battle Tested Strategies. And why don't you explain what's going on? I like to, because you did a great piece on this. And I just picked up too that the Teamsters are filing an unfair labor practice charge, rightly so. But from your mouth. Yeah,
sure.
From your mouth. Tell me what's going on here.
I saw that as well. Well, and all I really know is what I've been reading. So the Teamsters announced a few weeks ago that they had signed a contract with one of the many companies that Amazon uses to deliver the packages, a company called Battle Tested Strategies, based in California. You know, it was a very strange announcement because they said, oh, we have this new contract. And then at the same time, there was word came out that Amazon had announced that they were canceling the contract with Battle Tested Strategies, you know, which would presumably result in all of these 84 drivers losing their jobs. And, you know, there was a, you know, sort of a flurry of media coverage about this. And it occurred to me that, you know, there were some kind of fine points of labor law that were sort of not, you know, that were being sort of glossed over, I guess, in the coverage or that people were sort of missing. And so I wanted to write something just to sort of go through some of the labor law issues that will arise as this plays out.
Well, let's talk about labor law. And the show, we need to reform our labor laws in this country.
Badly.
It's long overdue. But we do have laws on the books. They may not be obeyed by the companies. We know that. I mean, they violate them all the time. But what's on the books here? What can we rely on right now in this case, Andrew?
I mean, I think the biggest question that this is going to turn on is whether Amazon and this company, Battle Tested Strategies, are considered joint employers. And this has been such a hot issue. Kind of crazy, because basically, the Republican Party has decided that big businesses should be unaccountable. And, you know, they have so much hostility to collective bargaining. You know, and one of the things that I think people don't even realize is that, you know, the National Labor Relations Act, you know, which has never been repealed, expressly says that the policy of the federal government is to encourage collective bargaining. And that's the law. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it seems like the Republican Party doesn't like that, but that is the law. And so what happens here, I mean, and again, you know, I don't know all the facts here because, you know, this isn't a case that I've been personally involved with, so I only know what I've been reading. But the drivers who work for these companies, the question is, does Amazon share or co-determine matters governing their essential terms and conditions? And, you know, I think just to a layperson, the answer seems fairly obvious that, of course, they do. Right. That if you're working for a company and they have one client, Amazon, and Amazon can say to that client, we don't like this driver, so that driver is going to lose their job. That's a pretty essential term and condition of employment, you know, whether you have a job or not. And if Amazon controls the pace that you have to work at, you know, that's another pretty essential component. And if Amazon controls the conditions in the vehicle, you know, I read somewhere, which doesn't really make sense to me, that Amazon's saying to the people, you can't open the windows and the trucks, even on hot days. I don't know why Amazon would, you know, have that rule, but apparently that's an Amazon imposed rule, not, you know, a battle tested strategies rule. But all of these kinds of things where, and it's not just Amazon, it's all these big companies where, you know, they hire contractors, but they retain all of the power. And so if workers want to improve their conditions, you know, they can sit with their contractor and say, we want a raise, you know, or we want to address, you know, the speed that you're making us work at. But if the contractor says, well, there's only so much I can do, it doesn't really promote meaningful collective bargaining. So I think that's what is going on here, is that, you know, the Teamsters would like to be able to bring Amazon to the table. And, you know, this question of, you know, Amazon canceling the contract, whether it's legal or not, is going to turn in large part on whether they're a joint employer or not.
And the National Labor Relations Board will decide this then, I take it?
Well, they'll decide it in the first instance. This was a big fight in the Obama years. I don't know how far back I can go, but basically, you know, in the 30 years from the 1980s to the, about 2015, the National Labor Relations Board had taken an increasingly narrow view of when one of these big, you know, one of the terms people use is a lead firm, you know, these sort of the big companies that contract out, you know, the situations when they're a joint employer. And they had tended to focus on, well, if you don't tell the workers exactly how to do their jobs, in other words, if you're not sort of, you know, on the shop floor, saying, well, move this way, not that way, then you're not a joint employer. And that was kind of where they were going. It was like, if you didn't, you know, sort of, you know, basically look over somebody's shoulder and say, tell them how to, you know, literally like how to move, then you weren't a joint employer. But there had never been really an explanation for why they were just kind of slowly narrowing that test. And then during the Obama years, the labor board sort of stepped back and said, well, that's sort of crazy. Of course, you know, just applying this test, you know, which the test, the words in the test had never changed over those 30 years. The test being, whether they share or co-determine matters governing essential terms and conditions. And they said, wait, there are words in this test. Why aren't we applying those words? Why are we just looking so narrowly? And they held in this case, it's called Browning-Ferris. They said, you know, we're going to look a little bit broader and hold these companies to be joint employers. Then when the Trump board came in, they immediately tried to overrule that. And they issued a rule that, again, went back to narrowing the basis for finding a joint employer. And we're expecting the Biden board to reverse that. I mean, they undid the rule, but they haven't issued a new decision saying what their new standard is going to be. But, you know, this is, you know, an issue that, you know, the Republican Party has been up in arms about, kind of a phony, you know, a lot of it is driven by this, the companies that are franchise, you know, that do a lot of franchising, companies like McDonald's, really very misleading campaign about this, that somehow if you make these lead firms accountable, that the small businesses will go out of business because, you know, the lead firms won't want to do business with them. But it's kind of a silly argument because these lead firms are still, they're responsible for their contractors in so many other ways. And yet, you know, like think about Amazon, right? I mean, Amazon, they're making deliveries, right? Mm-hmm. If the contractors don't deliver the goods, people are going to be hold Amazon accountable, right? I mean, if you ordered something from Amazon and you didn't get it delivered, you're going to blame Amazon. You're not going to blame battle-tested strategies. So it's not like, you know, they know how to control these companies about things they care about. They know how to take responsibility for what these companies do about things they care about. This is just, you know, they want to kind of slough off this responsibility and say, oh, yeah, we don't have to, you know, that's not our problem, you know, how the workers are treated.
Andrew, this is a fascinating conversation, and I'm sure a lot of people in our audience are wondering what the heck is going to happen next. Let's kind of speculate, if you don't mind. Andrew Strom joining us on our live line today, talking about Amazon delivery drivers that want to organize, and Amazon just does not like that. We'll continue our conversation with Andrew later in the show. We're going to check in with Amy Weiser on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Andrew Strom joining us on our live line today, a longtime labor union lawyer and a contributor to a wonderful blog called On Labor. And I feel like this, you know, we mentioned the teachers here. I feel like I'm in a classroom right now because he's Harvard educated. We're learning a lot about labor law and why we need labor law reform in this country. We're talking about a case that, who knows, it may wind up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Right now, the National Labor Relations Board is probably going to determine what happens here. It all involves the joint employer rule. And essentially, just to cut to the chase, we got some Teamster members out in California. They organized a delivery company, BTS, and they're contracted with Amazon. Amazon doesn't like that. In fact, they even said, well, they're not that great anyway. They're not reliable, but what do you expect out of Amazon? So let's get into this here. What are the rights and what can they do? I mean, okay, let me ask you this. Can a business like Amazon, can they cancel their contract because the employees want to go union? I mean, that's a simple question there. Where do they stand?
Well, I think the surprising answer is if they're not a joint employer, they can. And one thing about that is that, you know, unions like that rule in some ways because it goes both ways, right? In other words, that rule is the basis for a union can approach a business and say, we would like you to only do business with unionized vendors. And the business can... it can't reach an agreement with the union, but there's nothing in the labor law that stops a business from saying, we're 100% union. All our vendors are unionized. And so that, but it, unfortunately, the way our labor law works is there's a tendency to say, well, if it's okay to do it one way, it's okay to do it the other way. And so the law has been that if you're, if you're not a joint employer, then it doesn't violate the law for a business to say, we're going to cancel our contract with you because we want to only do business with non-union companies. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, there are ways that even if you're not the direct employer, you can still violate the rights of your contracted workers. And I think that's another important point here is that, and one of those ways, for example, is to make a threat to workers, right? So even though it may be legal to cancel the contract, it may not be legal to threaten to cancel the contract because the threat is directed at the workers rather than at the business. And that's the logic of that is that, that the labor law doesn't protect businesses, it protects workers. But if the business is saying, you know, like in this case, if it were to come out that the reason Amazon canceled this contract was basically to, you know, send the word out to all the other contracted workers that they better not unionize, I mean, that could be illegal.
So if the labor board, and I assume the labor board will be doing this, if they say that this is a joint employer situation, then they can unionize. They shouldn't have a problem. Is that right?
Well, if it's a joint employer situation, then canceling the contract because the workers unionized would be illegal. On the other hand, you know, I guess Amazon is saying, well, we had planned to cancel it all along. So that's going to, and if that were true, you know, then, you know, even if they are a joint employer, it would probably be legal. So that's going to be kind of a fact determined, you know, situation as to what actually happened and what the actual, what the actual facts show about the timing.
Well, Amazon is already on that course because they have come out and said, well, you know what? This company wasn't all that great anyway. They weren't performing as they should be as a contractor. So the very fact that they said that Does that kind of clear them in all of this?
Well, it clears them if it turns out that that's what happened. I mean, the fact that they said it doesn't make it so. So, you know, we don't know. I mean, it's unusual for them. I mean, it sounds unusual to me that they said, oh, we decided months ago that we were canceling their contract. I mean, I would have thought it would have been a tighter leash, right? I would have thought it would have been a 30-day cancellation, that if they, you know, decided that they didn't want to do business with them, that they would give them less notice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the facts. But that's, you know, that's what's going to, you know, that may be what the case turns on, is whether they really did decide earlier based on things that had nothing to do with the workers organizing or not.
Andrew, I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because what comes to mind is a time in America when you dealt with a retailer. I'm going to use Sears for an example. They're not around anymore today. But they were a powerful retailer for decades. And when you purchase something from a company like Sears, Sears was the company that delivered it to your door. That, those days are long gone. There's these independent contractors. There's a different world out there today. And it's important that those people that are working as an independent contractor have the rights that they deserve.
For sure. I mean, this idea that of, you know, these big companies with their name brands, right, sort of contracting out, you know, all of the people who were, you know, responsible for getting the work done. And you see it everywhere. I mean, you know, people, I mean, you see it in hospitals, you see it, you know, everywhere you look, that, you know, workers who you would think would be directly employed by the companies turn out not to be. And then, you know, the big companies say, oh, you know, not my problem.
Do you see this going to the U.S. Supreme Court? Because right now it has not, this joint employer situation. It's gone to a court below it. But is there a possibility it may end up there?
It may, yeah. It very well, may. I mean, I think it really depends, you know, it depends obviously on the, you know, the next election, you know, and who's on the labor board, because, you know, if a Republican gets elected and they can just undo it at the labor board level, you know, they would do that. But if they can't, you know, it seems like that's the last refuge, you know, of, you know, the Republican Party these days is, well, we control the Supreme Court. So if we don't like what happens below, you know, we're going to, you know, we're going to run to the Supreme Court to try to fix it. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of their playbook. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's a very real fear that, you know, sort of across the board, you know, I don't know if you had a program on this, but, you know, all the different good things that, you know, the Biden labor board is doing, you know, I think that is something that, and, you know, and even it's not even just the Supreme Court, you know, the Republicans, you know, during have taken over the courts of appeals in various parts of the country, you know, and there's, you know, there's judges on those courts that are even further to the right, if you can believe it, you know, than on the Supreme Court. You know, that's probably another, you can come back another time and talk about that.
That's why you're the senior contributor for the On Labor blog. Right, Andrew. 30 years experience in labor law, Harvard educated. I appreciate you coming to the table today to explain what's going on here. And we will definitely keep our eyes on this case. So thank you so much. Keep up the great work over there at On Labor, all right?
All right. Thank you very much.
OnLabor.org is their website. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org. The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at imed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit imed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good employment, good wages, great benefits, ulagency.org. Let's go to Kansas City right now, and joining us on line number two is Amy Weiser. Amy is the Director of Communications for the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Boilermakers.org is their website. She's also a proud member of Local 693. A little shout out here for 693 in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Amy, welcome to the show. Now, 693, that's a bunch of the shipbuilders on behalf of your union. Is that right?
That's right. That's located down in Pascagoula, Mississippi, which is the Ingalls Shipyard down there. Shipbuilding is a major industry we work in, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. But big shout out to my brothers and sisters down in Mississippi today.
We should also point out that Amy is a graduate of the Harvard Trade Union Program and serves on the Labor Federation's Union Label Board. Can you explain what that trade union program does briefly?
Yeah, sure. It's a fantastic program run through the Harvard Law School. The Harvard Trade Union Program has been around for decades and is a great opportunity to bring public sector and trade union up-and-coming leaders together to learn more about labor law, arbitration, labor history, and really focus on moving the labor movement forward together. It's a fantastic group, fantastic professors, and highly recommend the program if anyone has the opportunity to participate.
Well, let's educate our listeners right now. I'm sure there's a lot of people that do not know what a boilermaker does. It's pretty diverse. Maybe you could explain it, and we'll go on from there. So what's a boilermaker?
That's a question we get pretty frequently, and I can tell you we are not a university in Indiana, and we're not a shot in a beer, although those are both good things. What we are is really divided into a couple of categories, and I like to say we're the elite welders and riggers. We're divided into two categories, heavy construction and our industrial sector operations. So on the heavy construction side, we're representing welders and riggers who are building and maintaining massive power generation plants, refineries, massive vessels that hold liquids and gases under extreme pressures and temperatures. And so we're doing a lot of work in refineries and power generation. And one great example of our recent vessel work I can point to is the massive Shell ethane cracker plant up there near Pittsburgh. We were involved in that quite a bit. And then on our industrial side, We're making everything from high-end professional restaurant, Vulcan stoves and kitchen equipment, golf balls, caskets. We make easy loader boat trailers and beer taps. Boilermakers make cement. We work in the rail industry, repairing and rebuilding diesel locomotives and welding railroad tracks. We're working in the stove, furnace, appliance, and metal polishers industry and in forges. And like I said, another major industry we're really proud to work in is the shipbuilding and marine construction sector. We've been around since 1880. We're one of the oldest trade unions in the United States. We were founded in 1880, born out of the Industrial Revolution in America and the demand for steam power and rail travel. In fact, we built many of the steam locomotives that powered rail freight and passenger services in the 1800s and the mid-1900s. So we're excited to continue working in a different way in that industry. And, we've just evolved over the years, adding shipbuilding and maintenance, power generation, manufacturing, fabrication, cement, talc milling, and more. And, in fact, our full name is the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. But that's a mouthful, so we usually just say we're the Boilermakers Union.
Right. I gotcha. Now, let me ask you this. When you decide to become a boilermaker, you go to the apprenticeship program, do you, specify which area you want to go into, like shipbuilding, or do you learn a little bit about all those so you find out where you want to be? How does that work?
Well, because we're divided into two very specific categories. So if someone's interested, so for example, if we've got a high school student who's interested in getting into the trades, maybe they participated in Skills USA, they've got some welding skills, then they'd be pretty likely to head toward our construction sector operations, which would allow them an apprenticeship opportunity at one of our local lodges and training centers. So they'd be tested and evaluated there and brought into the apprenticeship program to learn more about welding and rigging to our standards. And then shipbuilding being on the industrial sector side is a little bit different animal because then, it's depending on what shipyard they're going to, what skills they're coming in with. So it's just a little bit different.
Right. I just saw a story the other day that the military is finally going to start shipbuilding again. And I didn't realize they stopped like 30 years ago, whereas all the other countries continue to build ships. I mean, we have to protect ourselves in the world today. That local in 693, any military ties over there?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, if I can just backtrack a little bit on that, we were really excited to be a part of President Jimmy Hart's work with the metal trades to win some of those contracts over at the Philly shipyards and up in Wisconsin to continue building and to have some of these new military projects that are coming on board. I mean, we've long built some of the finest military merchant specialty ships in the world. And just to give you a sort of a laundry list of the things that we're building in shipyards throughout the United States, we build Seawolf submarines, Aegis destroyers, LHD amphibious assault ships, and other vessels for the U.S. military. And in essence, Boilermakers are also responsible for maintaining America's naval fleet. So that's just kind of a snapshot of some of the military work that we're doing. And then in addition to that, we're also making and maintaining tankers, cargo ships, icebreakers, tugboats, and commercial fishing boats, what I don't think we've gotten into yet is the cruise ship industry, although I could be wrong about that, or maybe there's something coming up I don't know about. Just being in this industry is so different and exciting. We actually recently finished making the first electric Maid of the Mist boats. So if you've ever taken that trip up river, up to see Niagara Falls, that fleet is now all electric, and Boilermakers made those boats.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's awesome. I love Jimmy Hart. He's been on the show a number of times.
We do, too.
Yeah, he's a great guy. You know his favorite saying, don't you? Sinners belong in church, and workers belong in a union.
Yes, I have heard him say that. So, yes. And he's right. He's right on. Yeah, we've worked with him quite a bit, and we've been really proud to help him and support his efforts to make sure that these contracts coming up are union contracts for workers in America.
So talk to me about the clean energy future here. You got to be pretty excited especially with this Inflation Reduction Act, because we're trying to move America forward, make sure we get as much energy as we need. And I know it's the opinion of many in organized labor. We need it all. We have a very, very strong thirst for energy. Talk to me about the future here for the Boilermakers, Amy.
Yeah, it is an exciting time for us. And what you just stated is correct for the Boilermakers, too. We believe in an all of the above common sense approach. And, so as the world is grappling with mitigating climate change, we've been studying and advocating for these solutions. And one thing we see that's really exciting that's finally starting to get some traction is carbon capture, use, and storage, or CCUS, and also clean hydrogen technology. These are vital solutions. We've been advocating for CCUS now for well over a decade, and seeing some actual traction and work coming to fruition now in the United States and CCUS is both. It's been a little frustrating that it's taken so long for everyone to come up to speed with where we've been for a while, but it's also exciting to finally see that movement. And, you know, we've really got to credit the Biden administration and today's Department of Energy for being so aggressively active in addressing the issue of energy and climate change mitigation. We're seeing billions of dollars now finally earmarked for CCUS enhancements to the 45Q tax credit, for example, and that's making CCUS an attractive climate change solution option, and that's good for us as boilermakers and for anyone working in fossil fuels, because it's been an uphill battle, you know, fighting against misguided extremists who are focused on villainizing fossil fuels rather than focusing on real solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So, part of the reason we find carbon capture so attractive is that it's really a win-win-win. It's a way for us to decarbonize. It's a vital solution that can truly reduce carbon dioxide emissions. It's proven. We know this. We know it works. But it's also a way to preserve jobs, economies, and social stability, all while providing that reliable energy. And like you said, the demand isn't decreasing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to figure out a way to keep producing reliable energy, but make it clean. And that's something the Boilermakers have been doing throughout history. This isn't our first time working on that. We've been vital advocates and instigators as new technologies have emerged throughout history. So we spent decades, for example, installing bag houses, scrubbers, dry and wet precipitators, and other controls that have successfully reduced particulate matter, nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, mercury, and other emissions. So we see carbon capture, use, and storage as a logical and meaningful next step in pollution control. If I can get a little shout out for some work that we've done to explain carbon capture and why we think it's so important, we actually commissioned a film a couple of years ago to help educate the general public and any decision makers at the state and national levels about carbon capture, how it works, why it's important, why it's a vital piece of the puzzle. And we put it on a website we put together called, www.cleanerfuture.org. So I'm going to say that again. It's cleanerfuture.org. You can find some films there that explain the whole process. You get a lot of questions about it. Like you said, we've got to have every option working together, every possible solution working together, and that means we've got to clean up what we have existing. We've got to retrofit and build new with carbon capture on energy production. We also do need renewables. We need solar. We need wind, and we need conservation. We need all of these things working together. And mm-hmm. We've got to quit vilifying fossil fuels. The real villain is carbon dioxide.
To your point, Amy, there's a lot of work that needs to be done here in America, and it seems like the Boilermakers are on the forefront. So appreciate you coming to the table today. Amy Weiser, Director of Communications for the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and also Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers, Boilermakers.org. They're also on Facebook, Boilermakers.union, and on Twitter, at Boilermaker News. Amy, thank you so much. Keep in touch with us down the road, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for including the Boilermakers.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the Valley Labor Report and the latest from the UAW. Until then, all of you have a wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.